Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. So thank you for showing up. I appreciate you being here. Let's get on into it. So I'm doing this a little differently than I usually do. I'm kind of bedridden right now. I've committed to a restful weekend because my ankle has been fucked for months. I'm not exactly quite sure what happened to it. My subconscious tells me it was probably a hike about 2 months ago that I did with a good friend of mine, where I may or may not have rolled my ankle because I may or may not have been paying attention, so I have no fucking clue. But because of neglect, I've had this pain, like right around that joint, that rotates from the left to the right and gets worse throughout my work week. So by the weekends, I'm usually kind of in a lot of shit, and then I work too hard to get on my weekend to get a lot of other things accomplished, like my science projects or a clean house. You know, we all have shit we got to do. And after months of neglect, it has gotten worse and worse because this physical body requires attention and requires care. And if we ignore all of the signals that are being sent to us, and sometimes these physical signals can be very subtle. Yeah, that's a good word. Sometimes not so subtle. But when I was younger, I just got used to pushing through things and like ignoring them. And eventually, over time, these things would just fix themselves. And that's not happening this time because I'm getting old. And so I've been laying in bed most of this weekend with my foot up on like three pillows and a blanket, and I'm trying to raise it. Apparently, when we get sprains, fluid will build up in the ankle joints and it makes the joints swell. And this additional fluid causes rubbing and tension, which is most likely what's happened to me. Yeah. So anyway, I have this crazy fucking setup right now. Because I'm trying to do this in bed, and so I have my mic stand haphazardly hanging over my bed right now. I'm not exactly sure how my audio is going to come out. I'm always paranoid about how the way I do this, and I usually do it the exact same way every time, and I try to stand at the exact same distance because I'm stupid. I'm not stupid. I'm sorry, me. But I'm really ignorant when it comes to a lot of these technological things, and they make me anxious. And so I'm really horrible at editing, and I haven't put a lot of effort into that yet. And so because I do all these single takes, I was racking my brain on how I'm going to make this work. And so this one just might sound a little different, or might not. Maybe I'm just being worried. But I still wanted to sit here and see how you're doing. How has your week been? How are you doing? You know? Do you have physical stuff going on? A lot of people have pain, and I've been thinking about how to hold pain. I'm like a borderline hypochondriac, and so whenever things happen to me, there's always like these chain of painful events. Like I'll float from one pain to the next, and as soon as I get over one, I'll find a new one, and it's almost like this focus. But it's an obsession because then all of a sudden a lot of my mental capacity and space is consumed with this idea, which can be unhealthy, obviously. And not having any sort of medical insurance right now, I don't have any way to fix my ankle or fix anything unless I want to just split an arm and a leg, you know? So like, how do I hold fear about, well, this points towards mortality, really, right? Everybody's going to fall apart one day. There's going to be a day when I'm old as shit and I will not be able to get out of this bed. Well, I'll probably have a different bed at this point because this one will be rotten. But everybody falls apart. Nobody is able to keep youth and health forever. There's a lot of fear in that. How does that make you feel when I tell you that? What do you think about when you think about you when you're 80? Do you even want to be 80? I used to tell people that I would prefer to jump into a shark tank rather than have to live in a nursing home and be that decrepit. Now that I have my son, I'm not so quite sure if I want to jump out quickly or jump into a shark tank. You know, I used to say that I would buy 3 sharks with lasers particularly for that situation. You know, that's probably not a very quick death. That's just stupid. But maybe if somebody has the self-control and the ability to hold their pain in a clear and functional way, perhaps that 80-year-old decrepit person that I was judging is far happier than me. It's hard to judge health, especially when we're looking around and we're trying to compare and contrast with whose health is what we want. Are we envious? Do we want somebody else's body? Do we want somebody else's conditions? I used to be very envious of a lot of other people because I didn't have a good body image when I was younger. I was chubby and I didn't have any friends. And so I looked at the people who appeared to be little gods and goddesses to me, and I wanted that kind of hair, and I wanted to be thinner, and I wanted those shoes. Can we do that with health and happiness? When somebody seems content with their situations, and when they're able to be happy at work, does that make you angry when you're having a bad day to watch somebody else have peace? How about health? You know, when I get sick, especially when I was younger, I like the break. I like the being taken care of. I think everybody likes that. Like, who doesn't like being minded for? Not minded, not like, mind me, please. No, but like, to be the focus of somebody's attention because they care and they're concerned. You know? Not to say always, not to go Munchausen's, not to force that complex onto everybody around you. Like, woe is me, look at my pity. But it's nice. And it's also nice to care for others. Now, as a parent, my son has gone through hundreds of sicks at this point. And it's a special place to be able to show compassion and to care and to bring and to hold up somebody's health when they've fallen under the sway of malaise. It's good to be that person. It feels nice. And that's why some people make other people sick in that Munchausen by proxy, right? So Munchausen's is when somebody makes themselves sick or they go to the doctor a lot and they give a lot of different ailments that may or may not exist in order to get the attention of the doctor and to get the medicine. And there's something about this that brings them fulfillment and purpose to be a sick person. That's kind of the definition of what Munchausen's is. But Munchausen by proxy is when, like, I remember this story that was told to me about it was a young girl and her mother basically made her sick, like fed her poison and brought her to the hospital from a young age, had a kidney removed from her. And so the mother was partaking in this attention and able to feel purpose through her daughter being sick, right? And I think there's a middle ground where there's a healthy way to hold up somebody's unhealth. Wow, what a way to say that. But it's important, I think, you know, because we have these working hours and these responsibilities for all these single parents and even two-parent households that are trying too hard to financially keep themselves afloat. And so they can't not work. They can't, you know, call off for weeks. You know, if I really wanted to get my ankle healed, I'd have to raise it probably for a while. You know, but I have to go back to work tomorrow and that's going to further damage all this. And I have no idea when this is going to end. And that's terrifying. And I'm not the only one that's in a situation like that. But I'm still here smiling and appreciating this time off. this gift of condolence for myself, because I'm putting certain responsibilities down. I'm not pushing myself too hard. And in that way, just as the caregiver caring for the sick person, I'm taking care of myself here. And there's a good feeling that comes with that. There's a purpose too. And I can appreciate this time, even if tomorrow is going to hurt. I've told this myth a lot, but I don't mind telling stories again. So Sisyphus was this Greek dude who somehow blasphemes Hades. So he does something that really seriously pisses off this god. And so either Hades goes and takes him out right then, or when the dude dies, when he ends up in Hades, this is just the punishment that gets dished out. Because his short, ephemeral human lives, I'm sure Hades could just wait him out with his eternity. But when Sisyphus reaches to hell, he's given a boulder, a large rock, a stone with craggly protrusions and sharp edges that cuts the hand. A miserably heavy stone that Sisyphus has to struggle against and brunt his shoulder as he kicks up the hill and tries to push this massive thing up and up and up for meters and thousands of meters for what seems like an eternity. And after an eternity of pushing, he gets to the top of the hill, and the rock falls down, and immediately Sisyphus has to continue pushing the damn rock up again. Now, in certain renditions of this myth, I've heard an addendum added to it that I like, and that's that whilst pushing his rock, Sisyphus would smile, and he would laugh, and he would look towards Hades, and he would show gratitude and thank Hades for his rock. So even though Hades was looking for retribution, he was looking for vengeance for a slight that may have been done. He was unable to gain his retribution because that allowance of vengeance had to be given back to him by Sisyphus, and Sisyphus refused it with a smile. Now, we can all have trials and tribulations. We can all have suffering. We can all have thirst and dukkha, and we can have physical pain like an ankle. But how do we carry it with grace and continue to move forward so that we can enjoy even the painful days and we cannot take out our pain on the others that are surrounding us? And that also includes ourselves, not taking the pain out on ourselves through guilt or shame for being human. Never feel shame for your pain. I had a really good experience this week, too, as well. I made a very good friend, which it's hard to make friends in this world. A lot of the times, we meet people through technology now, and it can be hard to have trust and be sure of our safety when it comes to meeting people that are strangers. And that first step always requires a faith, really, that's going to work out, right? That you're not going to get murdered. Now that I thought this dude was a murderer, we've been talking for a while. And I've gotten reasonably good at judging people's character through their words and reading bullshit, like finding bots, and especially not native English speakers, which is a massive red flag when it comes to getting scammed. Not to be racist, but you know, most scammers usually pick on another country's people, you know, like the Nigerian email scams of the early 2000s, which I'm sure are still going. Not just Nigeria, all kinds of other countries, Russia, fuck it. But it's kind of scary, you know, and it'd be even more scary as a woman, you know, looking to go meet like men through Tinder. I mean, I would be terrified. It's so much like men don't consider it as often as women do, even though men do get murdered. I'm not saying that, but I've often been able to walk around at night and feel safe and comfortable, and I've met a lot of strangers, you know, but I'm a bigger guy. You know, I could try to defend myself. But that wasn't really the means of what I was really considering when I met this fella. I was mainly excited because I was added to a men's group a couple months ago by a good friend of mine. And most of the men on this group, and if you'd like to know more about it, you can email me. And I would love to give you some more information. It's Colorado-based, and it's a great way to meet people and find meetups, too, and have conversations, especially around psychedelia, which is one of my favorite things in the world, one of my favorite tools that are conducive for ruminating and contemplating all these different things that we have to go through. And so a lot of these people that are on this group are basically psychedelic professionals, like a lot of older men too, that are making businesses. And so my friend, I'm going to call him D because I don't want to blast him on a social platform, but he's made a company here. And I'm going to tell you his company name because I'd love to drum him up some business. So his company name is called Dead Inside Myco. That's D-E-A-D, Dead Inside Myco, M-Y-C-O. I think it's .com. Google it. I'm sure you can find him or look him up on Facebook. And so he sells genetics, and which is basically like spores and a lot of his different strains and equipment for growing psilocybic mushrooms, which if you live in a state or a country where that's not legal, I'm not giving you any recommendation or referral, and I'm not asking you to do anything with an illicit substance. But fortunately, here in my mother state of Colorado, I'm protected and it's legal. It's decriminalized for possession and for production for personal use. So the growing of psilocybic mushrooms is protected by Colorado law, and people can do that in their homes. And what my buddy does is he facilitates this process through information, by being a helpful and smart person, but by also providing the equipment and the different things that you need to do to get there. So his grow guide is available online, and if you reach out to me to email me, I can send you a personal link. It's completely free, and it's very conducive, and it's a really good, clean guide. It's got almost all the information you would need, and it's got pictures. And if I was better at it, anybody who asks me, I'm going to give them this guide as an authoritative source on how to go about it. But his website's great too. And we got to meet each other in person, which was really cool. I got to see a lot of pictures of albino mushrooms. Albinos are getting so big nowadays. And when I was growing up, every mushroom had a yellow cap, but now these white ones are all the rage, and they're powerful. You know, ape. Have you heard of what an ape is? A-P-E, albino penis envy. And penis envy, good God, what a strong strain. Very, very, very strong. Very potent mushrooms. And these albino ones are stronger than the regular penis envies. And so, especially for people who have sturdy constitutions, you know, some people are denser than others. I'm a light, floaty individual. I'm very sensitive. And it's very rare that I'll meet people who are more sensitive to me. And the sensitivity is not just chemical. I'm emotionally sensitive. I'm sensitive to physical stimuli and to change. And I'm very, very sensitive to chemicals like psychedelics. And my society promotes a endurance and a self-subsistence, you know, pull yourself up by your bootstraps, Johnny. You know, like America teaches us that we should be completely self-sufficient and that we should be able to mind all of our own issues, right? But this is to the detriment of our mental health, of self-care rituals, Because we're taught to burn out. We're taught to push, 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 push. And so because of that, especially in men, I see a lot of sturdy, just thick-skinned individuals. And when you approach somebody who has not lost, but sanded away some of the sensitivity or kicked on defensive mechanisms, these psychedelic medicines have more difficulty to penetrate, you know? And stronger dudes and stronger women too. This is not a male-female dichotomy. This has to do with human strength and will. And I'm just, my willpower is flimsy, and that's where I become Aries. You know, I feel like I'm very floaty because of the sensitivity, but that also means that I'm blown around like a paper on the wind, whereas a rock is not going to get blown around. And especially in my society, we admire the rock, you know? That person's a strong person. My father is a rock. My grandfather is a rock, you know? My stepmother is a rock. And I admire them for their strength. But there's a scale of being, and there's a diffusion from one side of the scale to the other side, and I would like to label that as sensitivity. I have a friend who's a little bit more sensitive than me. You know, I can give him the smallest amount of anything and he'll hallucinate. And I used to not believe him. I used to think it was hoaxy. I used to believe it was all in his head, but I believe him now. And he's an open window for me through speech where I can see into the space where I cannot see because I'm not sensitive enough, you know? And there's a Rubik's Cube of sides of moving equilateral types of things that we can be sensitive to. The material world, sensibilities, and what is sensation? Where are our senses coming from? Where are they being collected by? The ears, the eye, the skin, the tongue, the vestibular balance telling me I'm not leaning left, but I'm center. The thing that keeps me from not falling down. Knowing my place in the world. Knowing there's a world I'm a part of, maybe. You know, but I'm convinced and I can move around it and I can manipulate it. This comes from sensibility, right? All these things are connected in the end towards perception. And always there's this barrier between perception and reality. And this is a point that I always find myself confused and bitterly arguing in myself with contradiction. Because I know in my heart that I cannot trust sensibility and perception. And I don't trust the image I'm given by my brain of the world. And it's failed me too many times. But it's all I have. And even if we were in a dream, even if we were living in a matrix where our brain was connected to a computer where some evil facsimile of a mad alien doctor could feed us all of our sensations and could tell us exactly what was happening, and all of us are struggling so much because we have our own little alien programming that shithole, you know, which I don't believe that. But even then, even if we were in a dream, even if we were in the matrix, it wouldn't matter anymore because this is the world we have. So we only have perception. We only have sensibility. And then I guess the last piece to play when it comes to this whole game that we're all playing is the judgment. Judgment. Is this a good world or a bad world? Is this happening a good happening or a bad happening? Is this feeling a good feeling or a bad feeling? I want to find a way not to have those judgment calls anymore and just allow things to be, allow pain to be, allow emotion to be. Being. Well, yeah. This worked. I'm pretty comfortable on my bed. Not going to lie. I'm like lounging back. My foot's numb. I got to rewrap it. But this worked. Oh boy. I'm gonna go find a book. Yeah. I think I'm gonna read from Voltaire. I got him right here, and then I don't have to get up. So that'll be easy. I want to read to you. I like this one. This is from his Philosophical Dictionary. So in philosophy, one of the first things that we must do is define terms, because if me and you are both talking about A, but my A is different from your A, we're not actually having a conversation. Let's put in something a little bit more tangible. If I'm holding a teacup and you decide it's a coffee cup, and we don't know how to define the difference between a teacup and a coffee cup, it's going to be really, really hard for us to reach a consensus of understanding about this fucking cup. So, good philosophy always has to start from having a clear definition and understanding between all those involved on what we're talking about. And Voltaire has this philosophical dictionary, which is kind of tongue-in-cheek because it's not just like definitions. Sometimes he tells a story, sometimes it's even a dialogue to define these words. But it's still interesting. So here goes. This is his definition of the word equality. What does a dog owe a dog? A horse owe a horse? Nothing. No animal depends on his fellow beast. But as man has received the ray of divinity we call reason, what has been the result? To be enslaved almost the whole world over. If the earth were in fact what it might suppose to be, if a man found upon it everywhere an easy and certain subsistence, and a climate congenial to their nature, it would clearly have been impossible for one man to subjugate another. Let the globe be covered with wholesome fruit. Let the air on which we depend for life convey to us no disease and premature death. Let man require no other lodging than the deer or roe. In that case, the Genghis Khans and the Tamerlanes will have no other attendants than their own children, who will be worthy enough to assist them in their old age. In that state of nature, enjoyed by all undomesticated quadrupeds and by birds and reptiles, men would just be as happy as they are. Domination would be as a mere chimera, an absurdity, which no one would think of, for why would servants be sought for when no service is required? If it should enter the mind of any individual of a tyrannical disposition and nervous arm to enslave his less powerful neighbor, his success would be impossible. The oppressed would be 100 leagues away before the oppressor had completed his preparations. All men, then, would necessarily have been equal had they been without want. It is the misery attached to our species which subordinates one man to another. Not inequality is the real misfortune, but dependence. It is of a little consequence for the one man to be called His Highness and another His Holiness, but it is hard for me to be the servant of another. A numerous family has cultivated good soil. Two small neighboring families live on lands unproductive and barren. It will therefore be necessary for the two poor families to serve the rich one or to destroy it. This is easily accomplished. One of the two indigent families goes and offers its services to the rich one in exchange for bread. The other makes an attack upon it and is conquered. The serving family is the origin of domestics and laborers. The beaten one is the origin of slaves. It is impossible in our melancholy world to prevent men living in society from being divided into two classes, one the rich who command, the other the poor who obey, and these two are subdivided into various others which have also their respective shades of difference. All the poor are not absolutely unhappy. The greater number are born in that state, and constant labor prevents them from too strongly feeling their situation. But when they do feel it, then war follows, such as those of the popular party against the Senate at Rome, and those of the peasantry in Germany, England, and France. All these wars ended sooner or later in the subjection of the people, because the powerful has money, and in a state money commands everything. I say in a state, for the case is different between nation and nation. That nation which makes the best use of iron will always subjugate another that has more gold but less courage. Every man is born with an eager inclination for power, wealth, and pleasure, and also with a great taste for indolence. Every man, consequently, would wish to possess the fortune, wives, or daughters of others, to be their master, to subject them to his caprice, and to do nothing, or at least nothing but what is perfectly agreeable. You can clearly perceive that with such amiable dispositions it is impossible for men to be equal, as for two preachers or divinity professors not to be jealous of each other. The human race, constituted as it is, cannot exist unless there be an infinite number of useful individuals who possess nothing at all. For most certain, a man in easy circumstance will not leave his own land to come and cultivate yours, and if you want a pair of shoes, you will not get a lawyer to make them for you. Equality, then, is at the same time the most natural and the most chimerical thing possible. As men carry everything to excess, if they have it, in their power to do so, this inequality has been pushed too far. It has been maintained, and in many countries, that no citizen has a right to quit the region in which he chanced to be born. This meaning of such a law must evidently be, this country is so wretched and ill-governed, we prohibit every man from getting it, from leaving it, for fear that otherwise all would leave it. Do better. Arouse in all your subjects a desire to stay with you, and in foreigners a desire to come and settle among you. Every man at the bottom of his heart has a right to consider himself entirely equal to other men, but it follows not that a cardinal's cook should take it upon him to order his master to prepare his dinner. The cook, however, may say, I am a man as well as my master. I was born like him in pain and shall die like him in anguish, attended by the same common ceremony. We both perform the same animal functions. If the Turks get possession of Rome, and I then become a cardinal and my master a cook, I will take him into my service. This language is perfectly reasonable and just. While waiting for the Grand Turk to get possession of Rome, the cook is bound to do his duty, or all human society is subverted. With respect to a man who is neither a cardinal's cook nor invested with any office or whatever in the state, with respect to an individual who has nothing and is disgusted at being everywhere received with an air of protection or contempt, who sees quite clearly that many men of quality and title have not more knowledge, wit, or virtue than himself, and is worried by being occasionally in their waiting room, what ought such a man do? He ought to stay away. All right. Kind of feels Machiavellian, right? Like, kind of the prince-like. And I'm resistant to a lot of it, and I'm not saying I agree with what, especially what it appears on the surface. But you see, Voltaire is very satirical. And his use of a lot of these ideas, I don't think means that he is agreeable with them. I think he's using them to paint how people are acting, especially in his day. And I would also agree that that's how a lot of people are still acting now. I would love to hear what you think about it, what your opinion is. So if you want to tell me about the quote or anything else that I spoke about today, please email me at thegingerbreadmansdialogues@gmail.com. I'd love to talk to you. You can also find that email in the show notes. I'm just so grateful to have this opportunity again to sit here with you. And I'm so thankful that you chose to spend this half hour with me. And I hope you have a wonderful week. So thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Hello, people. It's Ask O and the Gingerbread Man again. How are you guys doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Nice.
Nice.
Why do you
say nice? It is nice.
What's it doing outside?
I'm actually just looking out the window right now.
Is it not snowing anymore?
No, it's snowing.
It is snowing, huh?
There's a bunch of snow on the ground.
Well, that's cool. Do you like snow?
Yes.
Do you like playing in it?
Yes. By the way, sorry for pushing you over.
It's okay. You have any advice to give anybody? What are you holding right now?
A pencil.
And
the stuffed animal me and my dad just bought.
Yeah. Do you like it?
Yes.
Good. Okay.
I don't know what I was doing. I decided to make sound.
I think you're great. Thank you for giving me your time.
Yep.
Okay. You have a good day.
Okay. Bye.